another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler.
Hi folks, this is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world, the changing times, and the things that we can all do to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Today is June 17th, 2009. This is episode, I think, 223, as I come out of my, what I've been told is my Casey Kasem voice, folks. And I did it a little bit longer. Sometimes I throw it in, like, in the middle of an introduction, just for a little bit. But somebody on the forum yesterday pointed out and said, hey, man, you know, new people might be like, is this a serious show? And I do it for fun, so I said I would do the voice a little bit longer today just for him. And so there you go. I did it one more time. But we will not be talking about the top 40 ways to stay alive while listening to your radio today. We'll actually be talking about kind of a myriad of things, just kind of free forming today is what I'm going to do. There's a bunch of stuff that's going on out there that I've gotten questions on, but not really questions like the stuff like, what do you think about, or how do I, or things like that. Just people like saying, hey, man, have you seen this? So I'm going to do kind of an around, you know, the internet type thing today with some of the things that are going on out there in major news media and alternative news media, and some things that people seem to really want to know about. Before we do that, though, I'm going to go ahead and knock out the house cleaning. I want to point out that our birthday, our first anniversary show, is the 20th of June. 20th of June is this Saturday. There will not be a show this Saturday. There will be a show on the 19th, this Friday. I'm not going to hold over the weekend waiting to do the anniversary show. I'm going to do the anniversary show Friday. That means that I will be at home mixing all the call-ins tonight for the anniversary show, the one-year anniversary show. So if you want to be part of the anniversary show, you need to call in today, because if you call in tomorrow, I probably am not going to get you spliced in. And honestly, at this point, it may be, when I put it all together, there may not be room to splice a lot more people in. But if it comes in today, I don't care if the show's an hour long, I'm going to make it work. But tomorrow, can't promise anything. Tomorrow afternoon, I can promise you it ain't going to happen. All right. So if you want to be in the 1 year, and what we're asking you to do, folks, is call in 866-65-THINK and just say what the last year's been like for you, and if the show's been part of it, how the show's been part of it. I've got some really great calls. This is going to be a really special show Friday. It's going to be one you're going to want to listen to. It's going to be all about you, and because I'm going to spin it out Thursday night, it will be published very, very early on Friday. And that means that those of you that, you know, download and listen to it on the way home, if you want to listen to it on the way to work, you're probably going to have the opportunity to do that. You won't have to wait for the email or anything. You can always just show up at the blog and see, or use your iTunes or your feed reader or whatever to see if the new show is published. Usually that email goes out about an hour and a half to 2 hours after I actually publish. It's all an automated process. So that's that. Done deal. Next thing, sponsor of the day is Ready-Made Resources. You'll find them and our other sponsors in the right-hand margin of our site. I like to remind you once in a while that our sponsors are actually personally vetted by myself and then by the forum moderators. If two moderators or more on my forum give a thumbs down to a sponsor, they never get to appear on the site. I don't care if they have a check in hand, I don't take their money. They have to go through that approval process. What prompted me to do that, I thought this would be a good day to remind folks of maybe this as well if you haven't heard it before. I was reading a copy of Mother Earth News, which is kind of, you know, airy-fairy out there with some of the global warming crap, but I find it to be a pretty good publication with a lot of self-sufficiency advice, and I like to read the letters that come in, because a lot of times for people like me that are pointing out, you know, maybe you guys should pay more attention to what to do instead of your political activism crap. Well, this one guy wrote a letter, and he was all pissed off because they have an advertiser that sells cigarettes in their publication, and how could you guys do it? So I thought it was kind of amusing, you know, whatever. You know, if that's your big problem, dude, don't smoke and go on with life. I don't smoke. I'm not going to get offended over a cigarette ad. But the response is what got me. Basically, they said, hey, look, we don't consider any of the advertisements in Mother Earth News to be personal endorsements. We just sell advertising in our publication. We're not, you know, vouching for their quality. We're not vouching for anything. And I thought, well, if I was spending my money with you as an advertiser, I would have just pulled it out and went somewhere else. Because you've just thrown your advertisers under the bus. And I thought, well, what's the alternative? And that's when I came up with the Ad Council. And an absolute statement that anything you would ever hear about or see on the site as a sponsor would be not just an implied, but an actual endorsement with a verification process. So that's how that works. Just so we can clean up or finish up the house cleaning today, if you guys think you get more than a quarter an episode value out of the show, consider joining the member support brigade and get exclusive content only available to members. Last night I finally put the new videos back there. Didn't get the discount stuff done. I will get that done this week at some point. We went and watched my boy play softball last night, and that kind of ate up a lot of the evening. But the new videos are there. There's a retake on the permaculture technique using beans with trees and climbing beans in a tree in our backyard, done a little bit differently than the one up in Arkansas. And then there's an update to the fig tree that we've been growing this year and the strawberry pot, which a lot of people have asked for. So that's in the Member Support Brigade now. All right, so let's get on with the show, and what are we going to talk about today? One thing I wanted to real briefly talk about is, you know, just what the hell do you do if you're brand new to this and you don't really have any food stored up? How do you get started? What are your first steps in storing some food? And this is what I would tell you as a survivalist, at least initially. Build your 30-day supply up around beans, pasta, and rice for a variety of reasons. One, they store very well. Two, they're very, very inexpensive. Three, if you put them combined together, you get a complete nutritional profile that will keep you alive easily for 30 days. And the people that have asked me, well, how can you feed four people for 30 days on $50? Note, I didn't say they would be real happy about their diet, but if you can't go out and buy enough rice, beans, and pasta to keep four people alive, pure survival, for 30 days, I don't know what beans, pasta, and rice you're buying, folks. Because it's very inexpensive, and you got to realize that that little box of pasta about doubles or triples in size when you cook it. Okay? So that's what that was based on. Once you have that core established, start looking at some long-term things you can do to put protein into the mix. Canned tuna, canned chicken, canned turkey, even canned beef are good things to add. Maybe one or two pieces of the canned beef. I'm not a real big fan of the canned beef. I don't eat it a lot, but it can be made into things, and it's actually kind of useful. Especially the canned beef stuff will actually make a pretty good thing to add into like Mexican foods and stuff like that. The big thing is to be eating what you store and storing what you eat. If you're not a person that generally uses dried beans, don't go out and buy a 50-pound sack of pinto beans tomorrow morning. Go out and buy a 1-pound sack of pinto beans. Cook up about half of it. Go get a recipe online. Try it. Learn different ways to make dried beans. It's not hard. People all over the third world do it. You soak the beans overnight in water and you cook them the next day is one way. Or you can actually do a quick soak method, which is where you put the beans in the pot. You put the water in the pot, you bring the water to boiling, you take it off the heat immediately, you put the lid on it, you wait an hour, you dump that water, and then you can go ahead and cook from there. Those are two ways to cook shell beans. Very, very easy to do. If you think you don't like beans, start learning with ways to experiment with them. In a shit-hit-the-fan scenario where survival is at stake, you may be eating plain pinto beans. But that doesn't mean that you can't cook, you know, something like pinto beans with some pork shoulder, onions, tomatoes. The next thing to add to your, you know, your reserve that you're putting aside initially is go out and get some good spaghetti sauces. Cans, jars, it's up to you. Cans are more durable. I think jars taste better. They weigh more, and they actually produce something that can be used for other means. The jar that's left over from spaghetti sauce can be used for storage and other things. So that might be your next step to bring stuff like that in. Then go out and get yourself some canned tomatoes, maybe some of the Rotel, some stuff like that. Okay? It's a very simple way to put things together here. And then from there, start looking at other canned vegetables that would mix in with what you've got there. One of the things you can definitely do to add protein to the mix is when you're buying your sauces, get the sauces that have some level of meat component in it. I know that you don't really, you know, sit down to spaghetti with meat sauce that you bought from, you know, Five Brothers or Ragu or Prego or whatever, go, boy, I really taste a lot of meat in here. But the meat is in there, so therefore the protein value of the meat is in there. That can get you pretty well towards, you know, your first month worth of the stored food. And it doesn't have to have gamma seals and be, you know, sealed up in Mylar or anything like that. Go get a great big dark-colored Rubbermaid tub, and by the time you fill that up with an assortment of food like we're talking about here, maybe throw in some canned fish, some different sardines, canned shrimp, things like that, and then you look at what you can do with that. I did a video for the Member Support Brigade on the very subject of taking some canned clams and some canned salmon and making a chowder out of it using almost 100% canned goods. It's an excellent dish, but you can do so many things. A can of clams, right, and your pasta. Well, let's say shit has hit the fan. You want to get rid of that and rotate your storage. Take your can of clams out, okay? Get yourself about 1 cup of a white wine. You know, don't use the cheapest white wine in the world, not the $1.99 stuff. Use a reasonable wine that you'd be willing to drink. Get yourself a stick of butter and reserve out your clam juice. Melt your butter down, okay, in your pot. Dump in your wine and dump in your clam juice and mix that together. Cook it down about, maybe 20% from where it was. Take your pasta that you've already cooked separately in water with salt water. Mix it in with that. Toss it together. That's a hell of a meal. It's something you'll go to a restaurant and, you know, you'll pay $15 a plate for. Maybe you need 2 cans of clams to give yourself enough clams there. But you might pay at least $10 a plate for it anyway. And you can make that for $6 and have enough to feed 4 people instead of 2. And you also have those as being storage methods. So that's how I want you to think about getting to your first 30 days. All things that store well, store for at least 6 months, that you can eat anyway, that you can incorporate into your diet, okay? And are very inexpensive, so you can get to 30 days very, very quickly. If your pantry is always, you know, just with the stuff that's always in there at 2 weeks, then you only need, in your little first tub, let's say, 2 weeks, and now you're at a month. You see how that works? And then you can go from there. And then you can get into more advanced things, like, you know, maybe going to Mountain House and putting away 30 days worth of really long-term storage food. Stuff that will last years. And keep blending in other things that you're doing, and increase your food capacity for production. Because if you have the ability to produce food in your own garden and from your own permaculture crops, that offsets things as well, and it gives you fresh vegetables to put in with stored. And you just keep building from there. So I wanted to talk about that today. Completely switching gears. I want to talk about this big conference. I've got emails from people. I heard about it first because it went out on Lou Rockwell last night. But I've got a lot of emails from people, including people sending me the Rockwell story and people sending me the Source story and people sending me blogs about it. And that's that the BRIC nations, which are Brazil, Russia, India, and China, met. And one thing they discussed is a new world currency. Well, this saber-rattling with this has been going on a long time. And some people are a little freaked out. Like, is this going to happen tomorrow? No, it's not going to happen tomorrow. I've explained this 100 times, that our dollar, long-term, is screwed. There's almost no way to fix it now. We've done too much, too wrong, for too long, and we've been too stupid about how bad we've been as a nation with the way we keep printing our money as though it's just paper. And we don't even need paper as a commodity to make our money anymore. We create our money inside a computer now. There's very little paper currency relative to the total money supply. I think it's less than 10%. I think it's quite a bit less than 10%. It might be something stupid like 3%. For some reason, that number sticks in my head. But I'll tell you this, it ain't 20%. And that means for every $100 that's out there, folks, there's less than $10 in paper. And it's probably about $2 in paper and coin to represent the money that's actually in the economy. Because everything gets done by bank transfers. transactions now. They're all, it's almost like just credits out of thin air that they've done with our currency. So what was this BRIC meeting really about? It was about laying groundwork. I just did a show. I just talked about China rising and how China was going to become the new United States in the world. That at their side would be the Russians, and the Russians would be acting like the UK of the old world. In fact, that China would then turn to Africa, buy up natural resources and companies, and buy their way into governments in Africa, much the way the United States went into the Far East right after World War II. And that they would use Africa as a production facility for low-priced goods to stimulate their own economy while they focused on higher-end manufacturing, making moves into public works, such as building more and more roads, more and more power plants, more and more infrastructure, and taking a real shot at upscale manufacturing in the auto industry. Said that, I think it was yesterday I did that show. And that Russia would basically downsize its military and take a back seat and act as a banker backdoor for the Chinese. Some people thought I was crazy. It was 2 days ago I did that show. Okay, I'm nuts. The Chinese can't build a car worth a damn. Well, people said the same thing about the Toyota Corolla when it first came out. Said the same thing about the Kias when they first came out. Don't underestimate the manufacturing capability of any nation. They'll figure it out. They'll get it right. So I was all wrong just because you thought Chinese cars were crap. Well, now you're seeing this BRIC alliance start to put some structure and trying to put a little bit of teeth under their movement. Now, what about the other two nations, Brazil and India? Well, India is going to be a player, and China and Russia aren't stupid, and they want India to be a player. They need India to be a player because they, one, have over a billion people. Two, are one of the few true nuclear weapon powers of the world. I don't, you know, I don't care what Iran does, and I don't care what North Korea does. When you have one or two nuclear weapons, you're not really a nuclear military. India is a nuclear military with a billion people and a very strong warrior culture. People, I think, underestimate India. They don't understand the warrior culture that is in the Indian populace. So they need those guys on their side. They've also traditionally been a very staunch ally of the United States, primarily because of American dollars being pumped into the Indian economy via outsourcing, a trend which is in decline. And India's built a lot of their infrastructure on that, and they need to diversify. Brazil is involved because they are so fast growing. And because they fixed a lot of their own stupidity, and they see the stupidity of the United States now, and they don't want any part of it. Now, India and Brazil are actually quite friendly to the United States, and believe it or not, Russia and China are more friendly to the United States than most people would believe from a standpoint of, are they really a threat? Remember how we used to think about the Russians during the Cold War, good people, bad government? That's a lot of the vantage point and viewpoint that China has of the U.S. But these people aren't bad people, right? We've been selling our crap for years. You know, when we go over there, they're nice to us. They come over here, they don't cause any problems. People are all right. Their government's a bunch of idiots. And you know, when one government says that about another government, the people of the second government tend to get really upset. But hey, folks, we say it all the time. That's because our government is stupid. The Chinese are right about that. The Russians are right about that. That doesn't mean I want a Chinese form of government. It doesn't mean I want a Russian form of government. But folks, trust me, the Russian government and the Chinese governments of today aren't really interested in the United States being like them. They just want us to stop screwing up the world's economy. Right? Because they've decided to play ball in the world's economy and stop being isolationist. So am I saying they're our best friends in the world and we should trust them? No. I'm just saying we also shouldn't see them as the big evil that they've been made out to be in the past. And we should understand why a nation like India and a nation like Brazil would work with them. So what does this BRIC alliance mean for us long term? It means that sooner or later there will be a new world currency. We're not going to be able to make the force the dollar on the world for the rest of all time. To believe that is arrogance. What will that new currency be based on? I know that a lot of people are like, it's going to be gold. It's going to be, you know what? It may really be a partially backed gold standard, but mostly a fiat currency, exactly the way that the euro is now. I don't know if most people know this, but the European Charter, European Constitution, what have you, actually requires that for every euro issued, there's at least a minimum basis of 25% in gold. So the euro is actually on a gold standard right now, but it's just this 25% gold standard. And that fluctuation in gold, since it's not a dollar for dollar, kind of lets Europe play a lot of games with that. But that's the type of thing that I think they'll sell to the world. We'll put some level of commodity backing in this. And at the same time, eventually what they're going to say is, China's going to say, look at our manufacturing capability. Right? We're producing, 50% of the world's output of manufacturing. Look at our involvement in Africa and what we've been doing there, and we're helping develop that nation. Look at how much we own throughout the world. Our fiat currency has more backing it than their fiat currency. And what the Russians are going to do is stay heavily invested in oil, tightly economically, not necessarily philosophically or militarily, but tightly economically aligned with the Chinese. And they're going to do the same thing that Britain's done for the past 100 years since their empire fell apart. They're going to use the big bully, China, as their front man, and they're going to make lots and lots of money behind the scenes. And they're going to actually, the ruble will probably be more valuable than the Chinese currency. All right? Just like the pound over the dollar, consistently right at 2-for-1. All right? I know you guys might think I'm nuts here, but I'm telling you, this is what I see coming. Brazil, I'm not sure what the Brazilians are going to do. I'm really not sure. I don't know that much about Brazil. I haven't really spent as much time as I probably should have investigating what the nation's capabilities and resources are. I do know they have a lot of natural resources. They have very high population densities in their cities, but they have relatively low population density throughout most of the nation. There's a lot of farming that can be done in Brazil. There's a lot of permaculture opportunities in Brazil, and Brazil may rise up to be even a bigger agricultural player than it traditionally has been. And if they do things the right way and stop destroying their land, like everybody else in the world has been doing, I'm not coming down on Brazil, I'm coming down on every industrialized nation. If they do it right, they have a lot going for them down there, and they can produce a hell of a lot of food out of Brazil. That may be their play. India, same thing, if they would stop destroying their land. But India has really ramped up their education level, their technology level, their project management capabilities, their administration capabilities. I think they will continue to be an outsourcing mecca going into the future. And those four nations aligned don't represent so much a military threat, but they represent an economic threat to America's place in the world. I'm not necessarily sure that if we accept that fact and adjust for it and simply accept the fact that what America was supposed to be when it was founded in the first place was not the leading nation in the world, but a place where a man could be free, have opportunity, and have alliances with none and commerce with all. That was the vision of the founders of America. If we would fall back to that role, keep the big stick of Teddy Roosevelt with having the military might only for defense and only if needed, stop meddling other people's affairs, I'm not sure that it would be a bad thing. I'm not sure that it would be a good thing. This is not my endorsement of it. But I'm telling you that it's going to happen. So what we as a nation should be doing right now is trying to figure out how to coexist with the roughly 3 billion people that this represents, over half the world's population, with massive military power, massive economic power, massive manpower, massive natural resources, and massive manufacturing capabilities that are not going to allow the U.S. to control what they're doing. They're just not going to allow it, nor should they. That's one thing I will say for them. I cannot fault any nation for standing up and saying, we're going to run our nation our way. And if you can, you better really think about that. So that's what I see coming out of the BRIC thing. And I guess that's a lot more than the half-page articles that have been circling around about it. But you have to analyze these things a lot deeper. So what's the next one that's going around that a lot of people sent me? It was an article about the fact that people like Jim Rogers and George Soros, very well-known, very wealthy individuals, the investment banker, and probably the linchpin of what really is the New World Order, are out right now. And where are they spending their money? Are they buying gold and silver? No. Are they investing in raw commodities? Wheat, you know, orange juice futures, pork bellies? No. Are they seeing the market's depressed? It's time to dump all your money into the stock market? No. Are they aligning themselves with people like Warren Buffett and going in and investing in his companies? No. What the hell are they doing? They're buying farms. They're buying massive pieces of farmland. Why? Because the property has not been depreciated along with the commodities that they produced. And right now, if you want to buy farmland, it hit a bottom. And it will not go through that floor. I'm not saying it will ever happen. I'm saying right now, this second, that it's just a stubborn animal. That the value of some of these properties have come down a little bit. And I'm not talking 20 acres for your bug out location, folks. I'm talking big pieces of farmland, 1,000-acre type operations. Just hold it. No matter how bad the economy gets, no matter how bad everything gets beat up, you're not going in and buying them for a dime on the dollar. It seems like the floor of that market, at least for the foreseeable future, has been reached. And these big investors are putting millions and billions of dollars into these types of investments because they know it's the safer long-term play. If you go and you buy wheat futures, you get at maximum maybe a year for the shortfalls, population growth, etc., to appreciate the value of your future before your contract runs out. If you buy the land that produces the wheat, you, one, control the production. You, two, have a way to produce enough income to support the investment until the appreciation comes. And three, because of that, you can wait a lot longer to get a major upswing in the value of your investment, either by selling the land off when its value increases or continuing to hold on to the production capacity and reaping the income rewards when the price of the commodities produced have gone up. That's a very technical financial analysis of what's going on. I've been asked if I'm surprised about this. No. In fact, I did a prediction show about maybe a month ago, and I said that what we would see in the future is the value of rural real estate, much smaller blocks of land, but you know, that 2 to 3 acres out in the country that somebody could go out and farm for themselves, the value of that property had pretty much held steady, just like these guys are saying about farmland, and that the land value of that land would appreciate over time as more and more people moved out of city centers and looked for a way to produce things for themselves due to the fact that food prices were going to rise and there would be shortages in the future because there have to be. So it doesn't surprise me at all. Now, I'll tell you where I think these guys may have it wrong. These guys are business people. And they think like business people. And they think like numbers. And that's all that they, that's when they do a transaction. And there's a value to that. The problem is, I don't know if they're looking at the underlying numbers, the underbelly of this investment, so to speak. So maybe Mr. Soros buys up huge blocks of land and looks at that land and says, historically, this has produced 10,000 tons of grain, various grains. So based on my calculation that the price of these grains is going to go up 4 times over what it is in the next 8 to 10 years, my investment is solid. I don't know if they're looking at the environmental consequences of monoculture. Monoculture, for those who haven't listened to maybe my shows about permaculture and diversity and organics and things like that, monoculture is what we do in most civilized nations today. We have one giant field full up of corn. So it's mono or one culture. And we have fields and fields and fields of corn, or fields and fields and fields of wheat, fields and fields and fields of canola, that type of thing. And the problem is that the land that this stuff is being produced on is becoming more and more infertile. You can only dump so much fertilizer on land before it starts to not really work very well. The water that's available is becoming more and more expensive and harder to get and being depleted in the form of fossil aquifers. Now, for the Soroses and the Rogers, if they plan on, you know, holding on to these things for 10 years and flipping them, it'll probably work out for them. If they plan on long-term production, which I would much prefer that they did, then they need to take a deeper look. And they need to look at, and I'd say this for anybody from a guy with 5 acres to a guy with 5,000 acres. If you're planning on making farming your future, and I think there's a huge future in farming and a lot of people going back to the land and a huge growing need for food, especially locally produced food that has, you know, less resources needed to get it to people, not because we're trying to save the polar bears, but because we're going to have less resources to work with to get the stuff where it needs to go, that you need to be thinking about ways to preserve and improve the land every year. When you use organic farming methods, your first year is never as good as going in and laying down a bunch of chemicals. I'm sorry if that offends an organic person. It's just true. It's just the way that it is. And it's been proven many times. By the time you get into your third and fourth year, where the chemical-based operation has been depleted to the point where it's now completely, totally dependent on chemicals, the method that's using the organic methodologies, the diverse plantings, permaculture techniques, water harvesting techniques, is so far ahead, it's unbelievable. It only takes 3 to 4 years to make that happen. 10 to 15 years into it, and you go out and you stick your hand into the land, and it looks like ancient forest soil. It's amazing what can happen with man shepherding to a piece of land over a decade. The thing that's going to happen in the farms of the future isn't so much just organics. There is even a place, especially in a large-scale operation, for some limited use of chemicals. Okay? But what there is no place for is straight lines, massive fields, one crop, heavy erosion, heavy land depletion, heavy resource depletion. It cannot be sustained, and anybody that takes that approach over the next 10 to 20 years will find themselves going penniless with their land. Their land will be seen as fallow and useless and unable to produce. That's what's happening to our land. And you can go out into some of the most, what was the most fertile land in the world today, and you can pick the soil up in your hands and you can look at it and you realize it's not far off from dust. And that's where these big operations will go if we don't start doing things. So what would the farm of the future look like if I was designing it? Well, first thing I'd do is I'd hire smarter people than me. Because I only know so much about this, but I know what I see that's wrong. So my basic outline would be if we had 100 acres we were going to farm, no patch of any crop, if we were doing even like a field of corn or a field of whatever, would be more than an acre. And a lot of patches would be a half acre or a quarter acre. There'd be a lot of things interplanted. There'd be a lot of tree lines. Those tree lines would produce an awful lot of production. There would be about 10 acres of it that would be managed completely as forest. There would be swales on contours throughout the entire thing. There would be multiple lakes and ponds throughout the entire thing, even though I know I'm giving up that piece of property. There would be many plantings that were designed simply to produce organic matter that could be laid down on the soil. It would probably be the case that conventional production, there would really be no conventional production, but you know what I'm saying, things like peppers, corn, wheat, things like that, would be on no more than 50% of the operation. The other 50% would be making materials for the land itself or producing more of a permaculture model, and the property would be massively mixed up, and it would require quite a bit more hands-on labor than just driving a combine through a field of wheat. But you know what? It would produce more food than any other 100 acres around it. And with the people that have these techniques today refined to an art to really maximize permaculture capabilities, I think it could be really something special. And if you had the resources of a George Soros, you know, you say what you want about Soros. I'm not really fond of the guy. But I tell you what, I would sure applaud him if he did that with 1,000 or 5,000 acres and demonstrated that it could be done. I don't know that I have a lot of hope that he will, but that's what I would do if I were these guys pumping the money into this land. And if I were you pumping your money into rural land and you were buying 1 acre or 2 acres or 5 or 10 acres, I would tell you to do the same thing on a smaller scale. And I would tell you it's actually a lot easier for you to do. And I would tell you, you can do it anywhere in the United States. I don't care if it's cold. I don't care if it's warm. I don't care if it's humid. I don't care if it's dry. You have to figure out what plantings will work, what techniques will work. But there's tons of information out there. And I think that every American with even a little patch of grass should be looking today to produce food for themselves. Because the one thing that these investments tell us is, yes, these people know there will be shortages of food and resources to get the food to the people. It is going to happen. My concern is they don't have enough vision to understand that the shortages are more about a growing, less about a growing global population and more about a capacity of production capability. And that we've kind of maxed out, even with all the GMOs and all the other crap and all the things that people have done chemically to try to massively increase production yields, we've kind of maxed it. And all this, you know, Monsanto bullshit isn't going to get us out of the hole anymore. It's not going to work. So we're going to have to go back to understanding how ecosystems work, and we're going to have to build ecosystems into our farms, not sterile squares full of one crop. So hopefully this has been a kind of a different show for you today. I don't know why, but there's not a lot of traffic today, and I'm almost to the office, even though I'm only at 35 minutes of recording. I guess it'll give me time maybe to spoil myself with a once-a-week Starbucks today. And I guess I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. But I want to encourage you to keep sending me your ideas and your thoughts. And those of you who have asked questions I haven't answered yet or suggested shows that I haven't done yet, know that I'll get to them all sooner or later. But in a moving car with only one day to prepare in between and still running a day job, I can only put so much research into each show. But I'll keep trying to make the show better. I make that commitment to you. Again, if you want to be part of the first anniversary show, I encourage you to do that today. Pick the phone up, dial 866-65-THINK, and tell the story of what the last year of your life's been like and how the Survival Podcast and hopefully members of the forum have been involved in helping to make it better. Well, you'll be part of Friday's show. Tomorrow I'll come back with a new subject. We'll knock that out. Then we're going to have that special show on Friday, and I think it's going to be really cool, and I think it's going to inspire a lot of people. This has been Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.